Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the NEOD Rewind podcast on war and violence. My name is Anne van Maurik and today I talk with Kylie Thomas, who some of you might already know since she has been a guest on the show before. This time we will talk about the post-World War II photography of the Austrian-born Jewish photographer Dora Kalmus. Kylie saw three horrific yet compelling photos in the Ostlicht archive in Vienna and wrote an article about their significance, and the article is named Undoing Gendered Expressions of Grief, Dora Kalmus Post-War Slaughterhouse Photographs. Kylie, welcome.
Thank you.
Can you briefly introduce yourself?
Thanks. So I'm a senior researcher here at NEOD. And I joined NEOD in 2019 when I had a Marie Curie fellowship focusing on women and photography and transnational resistance. And now I work together with my colleague Case Ribbons here at NEOD, co-directing a project on war and visual culture, and it's called the NEOD Image Lab.
Thank you. Yeah, as you mentioned, you work with visual culture. And can you perhaps tell us something about how this works as a source, visual culture? How can we interpret the meaning of photographs or of other visual objects?
Yeah, and of course, visual culture is really broad. It includes many different visual forms, visual media, not limited to photography, although photography is what I primarily focus on. But there's lots of interesting work around posters, about film, about visual activism, which is also something that I work on, which can also be about performative practices in public space. So there's a lot to analyze around how the visual intersects with how we think about history.
Today we're talking about your article you wrote about Dora Kalmus and her photography. Yeah, you found three photos, and I would like to ask if you can describe the photos we will talk about, and what do we see, and what does it make you feel or think? I'm asking this way because the photos are a bit horrific, right?
Yeah, so this article focuses on a small number of the thousands of photographs that Dora Kalmus produced over her life. She is also very well known as Madame Dora, and she photographed many people. She took many portraits of people in high society in Austria as well as in France. But the images that I focus on are from the post-war period, where a dramatic shift occurred in the work that she produced. And she created a series of photographs, a very extensive series of photographs, taken in the abattoirs in Paris. And so these are images of slaughtered animals, many of them quite close up, and in a way also individual portraits of, which are quite disturbing, of skinned animals. And so when I saw those images, I was really struck by them because they're quite gruesome, but they're also very powerful.
What kind of animals can we think of? I think that she used different animals, right?
Yeah, that's right. But they're primarily the animals that some people eat. I don't, they're animals that were being slaughtered, I think, primarily to be consumed. And so they're images of calves, of cows, of goats, and of pigs. And she's created a series of very striking portraits of these animals in death. Pretty disturbing.
The photos themselves also make me really curious about this person behind these photos. Can you tell us a bit more who she was and why you think she felt the urge to make these photographs?
Yeah, so, I mean, her own biography is really interesting because she's one of the earliest and one of the most influential woman photographers who owned and ran her own portrait photography studio. And there was a kind of phenomenon of that at that time in the pre-war period, of Jewish women who ran photo studios. And in Europe. And So she was in Vienna, and she decided that she wanted to become a photographer. And in 1905, she was one of the first women to attend courses learning photography. But she, at that point, women were not permitted to learn the technical aspects of photography. And so she worked together with a studio partner called Arthur Bender when she formed her portrait studio in Vienna, which she founded in 1907. She went on to photograph the Habsburg family and all kinds of members of the high society at the time. And she also photographed thousands of women wearing fashion clothing, and many, many images of Jewish women also, and several of them, many of them, hundreds of them, I think, dressed in furs. And that becomes significant in terms of the article that I wrote, which is about these slaughtered animals and which are skinned.
Yeah, I believe you write, she tries to find a language to represent the horror of the death camps with these photographs.
Yeah, so at the time of the Nazi occupation in France, she went into hiding and she survived the war. But she had a sister who she was very close to. Her sister's name is Anna Kalmus, and her sister lived in Austria, and in fact lived in Styria, and they owned a house together. And her sister first, well, her house was appropriated by the mayor of the town, and then she was sent to Vienna, where she was forced to stay in an apartment before being deported to the East, and she was taken to Lodz Ghetto, and after that she was murdered, and so her sister was murdered in this time, and in the immediate post-war period, Dora Kalmus, this dramatic shift in her practice occurred, where she no longer photographed high society figures, although she did continue to work as a commercial photographer because she had to try to make a living and rebuild her life in some way afterwards. But she spent 10 years working in the abattoirs, in the slaughterhouses in Paris, photographing slaughtered animals. And so I understood that as a response to not only what had happened to her sister, but to... it was an attempt to make some, to try to understand something, I guess, but also to make something visible, which she felt was invisible in the society that she was in. And she also visited Austria immediately after the end of the war. And so I think it was a response to that, too.
You mentioned that what she wanted to express was invisible in the society she was in. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
Yeah, so in the piece I draw on the work of Hannah Arendt, who wrote very powerfully about what she described as an inability to mourn, or a kind of callousness that she found when she returned to Germany in the aftermath of the war. And I think that there's very interesting parallels in the thinking of Hannah Arendt and the photographs of Dora Kalmus on this particular theme of trying to find a way to approach the horror of what had occurred, and trying to bring this to light, trying to trying to prevent people from avoiding thinking about it.
So would you say it was a form of critique to the indifference towards the Holocaust in post-war society?
Yeah, I think so. And also an attempt to find a way to express the magnitude of what had happened in the absence of a language to do that. Like, I think there was a profound kind of sense of shock in the aftermath of that. For Hannah Arendt, it kind of she describes it as a kind of abyss, and that is something that necessitated an absolute break in how we think about things, that you have to begin over again. That the ways of thinking that existed prior to those events no longer provided ways to understand the world. And so that you can see so clearly in the work of Madame Dora, Dora Kalmus, who, yeah, there's an incredible visible break in what she produced.
Do you know about how people reacted on these photos? Was it experienced by society also as a break or as a way of expressing what happened during the Holocaust?
So at the time, the images were not exhibited very widely. I think even only once during her lifetime. And then for a long time afterwards, there was very little attention paid to her work and to these images. And then in recent years, in the last 5 years or so, there's been renewed interest in her work. And there's been some major exhibitions that have taken place in Austria and Germany, as well as in the US, of her work that finally included some of these slaughterhouse images. But they certainly weren't at the center of these exhibits. And it's very interesting to think about why, what is being reclaimed and celebrated as her work becomes more visible again, and what is still very uncomfortable or difficult to think about. Yeah, because it doesn't fit in very well with the other kinds of images, which are very beautiful and, you know, in a way quite celebratory of the pre-war culture.
So what does it say about today's culture or today's society that it's getting a bit more attention in today's world?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there has definitely been a shift. And this is a kind of well-known in thinking about the history of the Holocaust, that at a particular point, it became unavoidable, and people, the sort of, I don't know, not only memory culture, but also the push for reparations and the political aspects of it came to the fore. People became more aware of what had happened and the need to recognize that. In the societies in Western Europe, I would say, however, I think that there's still a great deal that remains unrecognized and unresolved. I think there's still a long way to go.
I would like to talk about the question of the representability of the Holocaust. If I'm correct, there are scholars that argue that the Holocaust might be unrepresentable because of its magnitude, because artifacts could actually never convey a correct understanding of the types of experiences people had in the concentration camps. And I was wondering, how do you think about this, also in the relation with the photographs of Kalmus?
I mean, I do think that there's always a gap or divide between our experience and what can be represented. At the same time, I think that's what we do all the time, is attempt to bridge that gap and to express the inexpressible. And I think that is certainly not something that cannot be represented. I think that it's actually quite critical that we find different ways and good at ways to engage with this history, because I do think that there's an increasing distance from it, but also as time passes, but also commodification in disturbing ways. Perhaps an instance of that is the recent case of Anne Frank's image appearing on all kinds of commodities that my colleague Case Ribbons has written about.
Yeah. Perhaps it's good to say a bit more about this. So Anne Frank, I think her head was illustrated and printed on teacups.
On like homeware, basically things that you would use in your house, and alongside other iconic emblems depicting Amsterdam and the Netherlands, like windmills and, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what else was on there, but
so would you then say, if we are saying that the Holocaust is unrepresentable, then that would also blind us for the ways it is being used and also misused?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think that, yeah, the so-called unrepresentable things are represented all the time, right? So, I think that, I mean, it would be a great injustice also to the work of, and the testimonies and accounts of people who survived, for instance, who wrote texts about their experiences. And sure, you know, I mean, there's a paradox there that many of those survivors noted themselves. I mean, one of the very interesting writers, Charlotte Delbeau, who survived Auschwitz, you know, wrote the title of one of her books is "None of Us Will Return." So yeah, I mean, there's certainly a sense that there are things that cannot be completely understood, but that I think that's the case with all forms of experience. We're always striving to that rather than attaining it.
Let's talk about the photographs in relation to gender. You already elaborated a bit on this. Your article is titled "Undoing Gendered Expressions of Grief, Dora Kalmus' Postwar Slaughterhouse Photographs." How does gender play a role in these works?
Yeah, so in a way, partly the focus around gender came into this piece because it was, you know, I was invited to send in some work for a special issue that focuses on pain, for a journal that focuses on feminist studies and gender. And so I had to think quite carefully about that. And so when approaching Dora Kalmus's work in this regard, I think it's to do with how her work refuses the kinds of conventions that we associate with woman and mourning and wartime. Because if you think of some, you know, monuments, for instance, that show grieving mothers mourning their sons or mothers with their children, or in some of the work I know that you do, Anna, around hunger, the images of women and suffering take on a very particular form, and they often involve a woman's body. Yeah. Portrayed in suffering. And so Dora Kalmus does not include any images of herself or of other women grieving. Instead, she introduces a very kind of disturbing and in some ways radical approach to this question of the mass slaughter of people. Obviously, she is mourning her own sister and grieving for her sister, but she does this in quite a, I would say, it is emotional work, but it's also very carefully staged. And it's something that, is something that we might associate more with philosophy, I think, in her thinking about. It's photographs that think.
So does it then also have something to do with that it takes grieving out of the private atmosphere, so out of the house and into the slaughterhouse?
What I think is that woman's grief always performs a function in relation to public mourning. So it's less that that her grief becomes public. It's about how the grief is made public, and it's not made. It's something that is not easily sentimentalized or dismissed. Maybe it's something, partly because it's so unconventional, it forces us to really try to think more carefully about what it is she's experienced. It's not something that we can say, oh, well, that's like a kind of trope. Or, you know, as what we were discussing about the image of Anne Frank, it becomes so ubiquitous that you no longer see that this is a child who was murdered. You, in fact, just see it as like a lovely little symbol of Amsterdam and, you know, something to go to visit as a tourist, and you associate with pannekoeken and stroopwafels. This is really not, you know, so good, obviously.
No. Yeah. No, very clear. In the article, I remember that you also addressed the work of her studio partner. Perhaps it's interesting to tell a bit about that.
Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this is something that has definitely been left out of the exhibitions that have, these major exhibitions that have taken place and the books that have accompanied them. He becomes a kind of footnote in those, in the history that reclaims this Jewish woman photographer for Austria in the present day, which is kind of ironic in itself. But I think it's very important to mention his work and what he was doing at the same time. So Arthur Benda and Dora Kalmus had an acrimonious split they were business partners, and he took over the Vienna studio, and she worked after that primarily from Paris from around 1927, I think. And but during the war, when she was in hiding, he continued to operate the photo studio, which he ran under the name Dora Bender Wien. And in that time, he photographed, he took numerous portraits of Nazis in Austria, and those portraits are included in the Austrian National Library. And I came across this large series of images that he made at that time and found them really disturbing, because he replicates the photographic style that they used to use in fashion shoots, but his new clientele replaces the people that they used to portray. And these are really disturbing images, and I think that it's very important to look at the photographs that these two photographers made alongside one another, and not to airbrush this part of history out, because it's a reminder of an ugly past that I think in some ways it can be easier to, ironically, to focus on the work of Dora Kalmus and on Jewish photographers, and to kind of reclaim them. And to me, this is quite disturbing. It's a term that the philosopher Gillian Rose coined, Holocaust piety. It's a way of making the Holocaust something that is it, that we commemorate, that that we know is a terrible thing that happened, but that we also don't think about too much. In a way, it makes it palatable for us.
So he was a photographer as well, right?
Yes, yeah. He was.
And yeah. What kind of pictures were so disturbing?
So these are photographs, these are portraits that he made of Nazis, which actually bear the stamp of their portrait studio. So her name... So at the same time as she was in hiding, her sister's murdered. Dora Kalmus, Madame Dora, because it says the portrait studio with both of their names, Dora Bender and Wien in Vienna, and these are stamped on these portraits of Nazis dressed in uniform, backlit as they used to backlight the fashion photos. And it's something that the writer W.G. Siebold refers to as German racial kitsch. They're terrible pictures, but very interesting to think about alongside the work that she did.
Yeah, it shows the complexities of that society back then, that her name was even used on those kind of pictures.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, it also shows the complexity of society today, that... Yeah. It's her work that's come back into the public eye, and I think that people are quite eager to forget his complicity or the complicity of others in Austria with that. And it's very interesting to me to see this phenomenon of the sort of return of Jewish women photographers' work or Jewish artists, etc. These become the subject of major exhibitions, and then I think some difficult questions are not asked about what does this mean really in the present.
Well, that actually leads to the last question. I guess the meaning of visual culture changes over time and space, right? And what's the significance of Kalmus' work in the world of today?
So I think it is performing an important role in kind of mediating this history of the Holocaust, particularly in Austria, as she is in some way sort of like reclaimed. And that's what I write about at the end of the piece, is about the town where she had owned a house with her sister, which she reclaimed after the end of the war. And so... Yeah, and it's very interesting because in October 2019, her remains were exhumed. Dora Kalmus' remains were exhumed from her grave, which was in that town in Fronleinten, and reburied in an honorary grave by the Jewish community in Graz. And then a year later, Stolpersteine were put outside of the house that she had shared with her sister, commemorating their lives and deaths. And a kind of grave site for the sisters was installed in the town, but of course it's an empty grave. The whereabouts of the remains of her sister are obviously unknown, and her remains were reburied, so it's an empty grave. And so what I write in the piece is that this kind of false grave, which commemorates their lives, but at the same time omits how and why they died, and why her sister was murdered, conveys this kind of tension between attempts to repair the past wrongs and this kind of refusal to face what really happened that I think persists in Austria today. And I've been thinking about contemporary Austrian artists and visual activists who are contesting this kind of historical amnesia. And one of them that I mentioned in the piece is an artist called Eduard Freudmann, who does work together with others, very interesting work that troubles what Rose terms Holocaust piety, and which really refers to these kind of like dominant forms of commemoration that help us to feel that the past is just behind us and that there's not work that we still need to do in the future or in the present.
Thank you for this, Kylie. Wonderful to have you on the show again.
Thank you, Anna. Thanks.